Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the getting to know you, getting to know all about you edition. As the Bengals get ready for their first head-to-head meeting with Joe Burrow and the other top prospects in this year's draft at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. Coming up, I'll discuss that and much more with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Our topics include Joe Burrow's most recent comments about possibly being the number one pick in this year's draft. I'll ask Lap if he would vote yes or no on the new collective bargaining agreement proposal that the owners have approved. And best of all, Lap will answer the questions you submitted on Twitter and Facebook under the hashtag AskLap. That's straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since Airborne Vitamin Tablets. As you might be able to tell, I'm dealing with a bit of a cold, and whenever I have one of my strategies for fighting it is putting Airborne brand vitamin supplements in grapefruit juice. It's basically a big vitamin C cocktail. Does it make medical sense? I don't really know, but it seems to work for me. So the next time you have a nasty cold, try Airborne vitamin tablets in grapefruit juice. It tastes good too. Now let's get to football, where it's time to ask Lap. Lap, I don't know if you are familiar with this, but there was recently a 28th Amendment added to the Constitution, which dictates all Bengals podcasts must begin with a discussion of Joe Burrow. Here's what I want to start with today. Joe Burrow's recent comments to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram when he was there to accept the Davey O'Brien Award, which included a Rolex watch, by the way. That was nice. When asked about being drafted by Cincinnati, here's what Joe Burrow had to say. Quote, I am blessed to be in the position I'm in. If they select me, they select me. I'm going to do everything in my power to be the best football player that I can be. That all sounds good. But he also said, I'm not exactly sure what the question was, I do have leverage. They have their process, and I have my process. So what did you make of those comments?
They were kind of north and south pole a little bit. The first comment, obviously, I was impressed by. He's a competitor. In talking with his teammates that were down at the Senior Bowl, particularly the offensive lineman from LSU, that's all they said was, cold-blooded competitor. But in all the right ways, nothing negative, all positive in how he led and how he set goals and achieved his goals and everything that went along with it. And so I'm thinking, well, here's a guy that with all the people saying, Cincinnati Bengals 2-14, a joke. Who would want to play for that football team? He made it sound like he wanted to be part of the solution and turnaround. And, it would be the next chapter of the Joe Burrow made-for-TV movie in that, comes out of nowhere. Because I'm looking at all these publications before the 2019 season started. Joe Burrow's not even talked about. I mean, he's not even discussed.
Day two pick.
Yeah, day two pick. And his LSU's not even in pick to be in the playoffs. LSU's not talked about. Joe Burrow's not talked about. Joe Brady's not talked about. And it is a storybook deal what they did. They've all benefited. Joe Brady is now an offensive coordinator. Carolina Panthers. Joe Burrow is about to be the first pick of the NFL draft. And it would be the next chapter of that story. I think why not take a guy, the come from nowhere Heisman Trophy winner who had the most prolific quarterback season in the history of college football on all levels. Every way you measure it, it was unbelievable. Never had even come close to having a season like Joe Burrow had. So why not the next step, go to the National Football League, take a 2-win team to 9 or 10 wins and make them playoff competitive and be part of the solution. I like that. I like that that part of it. He has his leverage. What is that?
I don't know.
I really can't figure it. The leverage is you don't play for a year. And I don't see the Burrow family – the father, mother, two brothers that played at Nebraska. One played safety, one played linebacker. Football family to the nth degree. I don't see that a guy who came from that environment with a mindset to sit out a year.
He's also going to be 24 this year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the clock's ticking. You know, I guess that's what he's talking about. I don't know. He may have been in a very, very far stretch way talking about, well, Eli Manning, he dictated where, you know, he went. John Elway dictated what happened with him in terms of the draft. That did happen. John Elway had baseball as leverage.
Correct, and went and played minor league baseball in the Yankees organization.
Yeah, right. He was in the Yankees organization and a good prospect. You know, could have maybe played, maybe made the major leagues as a baseball player. Joe Burrow was an all-state basketball player. I mean, what is he, NBA bound? Doubt it. You know, so I mean, I don't understand. You know, that leverage part of it that he's talking about, other than, you know, just maybe letting, in a way, letting other teams know, look, go ahead and trade for me. You know, if you're thinking about making an offer, go ahead and make an offer to the Bengals because, you know, I'm trying to establish as much leverage as I possibly can. Instead of coming out and saying, you know, I want to be a Cincinnati Bengal, I look forward to being a Cincinnati Bengal. That's what everybody in Bengaldom wants to hear. He's not going to say that, you know, because, you know, what if he's traded? You know, now all of a sudden, well, I really did want to be a Bengal, but now I'm glad to be a whatever. I mean, you can rationalize it that way. I know all Bengal fans would love to see him say, look, no matter, I'm fine. I want to be a Cincinnati Bengal. They've had a great quarterback history and tradition there. I want to add my name to that list of great quarterbacks with the Cincinnati Bengals. That's exactly what Bengaldon would like to hear, but they're not going to hear it.
Well, maybe they could hear it at the Combine. He's scheduled to do a news conference on Tuesday, I believe. But let's talk about the Scouting Combine, which gets underway this weekend and runs all of next week with the drills in primetime for the first time. So if you want to watch guys in primetime running the 40 and doing the bench press, you're going to have your chance this week. But this will also be the Bengals' opportunity to sit down face-to-face with 45 players for 18 minutes apiece, and I've got to assume that Joe Burrow's on that list. It'll be the first opportunity to do that with him. Normally, the player is trying to impress the team. Do the Bengals need to impress Joe Burrow with their vision for his future?
I think so. I think if I were Joe Burrow, the first question when they say, you know, they fire questions at Joe Burrow, and then probably at the end, if there's time, they say, do you have any questions for us? My question would be, if I'm Joe Burrow, what's your plan? You know, how do you foresee what changes will be made in terms of personnel, philosophy, whatever the case may be, to turn around a two-win team? I'm not the – if you think drafting Joe Burrow solves all your problems, I'm here to tell you they probably don't. What else are we talking about? That's what I would ask. You know, I would put on my humble hat. You know, I have confidence in my ability, but me single-handedly is not going to take a team from 2 wins to 10 wins. What else are we talking about? And I do think, you know, they should have – some sort of an idea or some sort of a plan to present him, because he's going to sell them very quickly on his personality. I mean, I think they already know enough. So I think that interview session is going to be a lot different than just about all the others. I think all the others are going to be more fact-finding. He is so overexposed at this point. I mean, everybody knows everything about Joe Burrow's life, his football life, his private life, every aspect of the Joe Burrow story. So I would get to the next level of, you know, drilling down as quickly as I could with Joe, and I would see, you know, with his football acumen, you and Joe Brady connected. What was it? What were the things that made your season so successful? Put up on the grease board here. Things, you know, concepts that you guys implemented, things that you were looking for at all times. Tell us what the Joe Burrow season was like, you know, as you were preparing for an opponent and maybe taking through certain things in games and all that sort of thing, just to confirm his football IQ, which everybody says is, you know, summa cum laude. Mm-hmm. So he's a football mensa, and he processes quickly. So I think they'll get through that pretty quickly too. But I do think the future plan is big on, you know, on, for both parties.
I did a rant on last week's podcast, first talking about how Joe Burrow had never said specifically that he didn't want to play for the Bengals. But then the second part of my rant had to do with this notion that he shouldn't want to come to Cincinnati. And I want to follow up on that because it continues to bother me. If those stories had been done in the late 1990s, they would have been harder to refute during the so-called lost decade. But you can't go to the playoffs six times in a seven-year period by sheer luck. Can't be done in the NFL. I think Marvin Lewis deserves a lot of the credit for helping the Bengals modernize their organization. I think Duke Tobin has largely done an excellent job as a GM without having the title of GM. Why is it that 2009 to 2015 doesn't seem to exist for so many of these national football commentators?
Yeah, they look at it as, you know, as the anomaly, the blip, you know, the it's a unicorn. It doesn't belong, you know, and I can see that for a year. But when you're to the point where you're, you know, perpetually five straight, you know, six out of seven, that kind of thing now becomes, you know, very significant. And of course, everybody is and should give Marvin Lewis a lot of credit. I mean, he was there for 16 years and made seven playoffs, almost half of his coaching career. He was in the playoffs for the Cincinnati Bengals. That's a record. I mean, five playoff appearances in a row is a record. But you know, people don't even talk about that. What they talk about is the last playoff win, January 1991, and you know, it's such a long drought. As every organization will tell you, it is hard to make the playoffs, hard. And, you know, equally or even more so to win a playoff game, and that can be attested to, obviously, by this franchise. But to make the playoffs 5 years in a row, only a handful of teams, you know, organizations have done that. It's not like half the franchises in the National Football League. I think it's maybe, you know, maybe a little more than a handful, like six, I think, have maybe done it, gone to the playoffs five straight seasons at any time. So it's not something to take lightly, but I think, you know, the easy comment on that is everybody's saying that was Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis is now at Arizona State. Marvin Lewis isn't part of the Bengals organization anymore. So it's almost like, you know, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. Is it Tom Brady? Is it Bill Belichick? You know, is it the Cincinnati Bengals or is it Marvin Lewis? You know, you take Marvin Lewis out of the picture, what else is where's the light in the Bengals organization that's going to lead them out of the darkness currently with a 2-14 record, you know? So that's what you know, I hear from a lot of people. But we'll see, you know. And Marvin did do a great job of bringing, you know, the exposure that he had with the Baltimore and Pittsburgh and those organizations. He did bring, you know, a lot of that outside ideas and ways of doing things to the Cincinnati Bengals. Zach Taylor has had exposure multiple places himself, you know, Miami, L.A., the college scene. You know, he has, I'm sure, some ideas as well. So we'll see how his are implemented.
I'm not the only person annoyed by this thought process that the Bengals are completely incompetent. The current players are getting ticked off about it now as well. Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon, and Auden Tate, among others, tweeting about it this week. Do you think that the proving people wrong thing is going to become a motivator for this year's team?
Players always look, athletes always look for the chip to put on their shoulder. And this one is not a chip. It's the old 2x4. Yeah, I mean, guys, one thing that guys have that ascend to this level of professionalism in terms of sports or anything, really, any job that you seek to try to improve yourself on and be the best you can be is pride. You know, these guys have big time personal pride, and they feel like they're being personally attacked. Even if it's just, and it's when they see Cincinnati Bengals, they see themselves. I mean, that it's yin and, I mean, they're just totally tied together. So they feel like they're being attacked by people, not just organizationally or coaching staff. Or it's like me, I'm being attacked, and my teammates are being attacked. So I'm going to come to my defense. I'm going to come to my teammates' defense, and the best way to do that is to shut people up is to win football games, to play better. So I do think there's there's a big chip there. And I do think guys that will be part of their motivation. There's no doubt about it. They have plenty of material for a bulletin board. In fact, they could fill a bulletin board. There would be a city block big. There's all kinds of stuff out there, man.
All right, let's get to the big breaking news in the NFL. We interrupt the Joe Burrow portion of the show to get to this. The owners have approved a new collective bargaining agreement. Now it goes to the 32 player reps. They have to approve it by a two-thirds majority. And if that happens, then it goes to the roughly 2,000 players as a whole. They vote, and then it would just have to pass by a simple majority. And that would mean 10 years of labor peace. Some of the things that are in there, it calls for the possibility of a 17-game regular season. That would apparently kick in as soon as 2022. It calls for an expanded playoff field, one more playoff team from each conference. That could actually go into effect this year if this gets approved quickly. There's some other stuff in there that benefits the players, like a bigger share of the total revenue pie. If there's a 17-game schedule, they could make $5 more billion over the next 10 years if this thing gets approved. Here's my question for you. If you are an active player right now, based on what you've read and heard, would you vote yes or no?
I would vote yes, because I think a lot of the things that they're addressing in there, the big money players are going to say no. J.J. Watt's already come out. Absolute no. He's got hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. All they have to do is have 51% of the rank and file of the players vote yes. 5% of the players get humongous money. They're talking about on that 17th game, capping it at $250,000 for that game. You know, well, there'll be 5% of the players that have a real problem with that because they make a lot more than that, which is incredible. $250,000 per game. Oh, my God. But a big number of people, over 50% would be like, yeah, I'd do that 17th game and get that extra money. I mean, my career is it going to be, will I even get vested? Will I be around long enough to be vested? I mean, the number of people that are fortunate enough to play, you know, 10 years or more in the National Football League is not a huge number. It's 2,000 players to begin with. And the players that are making this humongous money is 5% of those 2,000 players. It's not, you know, you're talking 70 guys maybe, you know, or not even that, 60 some odd guys. So it's not. I think it'd be the tail wagging the dog if those 65 people determine the fates of all those others. You know, so I think it's going to pass, and I think it probably should, and because there's a lot of things. I mean, they're talking about with the 17th game. They're talking about bringing more people off IR more readily. They're talking about activating an extra lineman, offensive lineman, on game day. So 17, it's like, okay, well, we don't want teams limping and gimping to the playoffs. We still want it to be good football. So they're saying that the practice is going to be lighter. You know, workload is going to be a big factor with the 17th game. And I think it'll quickly go to 18 because 17, that odd number, where's that game going to be played? Every other season, you'd have an extra home game than other teams. I think it's going to be a neutral site where they're trying to, you know, generate some interest as the next NFL franchises, have teams go there and play, wherever they may be around the country. And then
world.
International, mm-hmm. Yeah. Go to Mexico. You're even talking Brazil, you know, London.
See, I think that's a great idea. Rather than having a team in London, mm-hmm. use that 17th game to play a bunch of games over there, and then a handful of others in, you know, Germany, Mexico, Canada, whatever.
Brazil, they're talking. Sure. So, yeah, I mean, and make it more of an international scope. And why would you do that? Dollars. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's all about the dollars, and really, it's a brilliant move to try to get this collective bargaining agreement done because the next network contract is 2021. So if they have this in place, we have more revenue for you, we have more inventory for you. That means more revenue for us. The extra playoff game, could it be a Monday Night Football game? That would make the Monday Night Football package much more lucrative. You know, and the extra playoff game, that's just two teams. You know, that if they do that, The extra playoff game, I think, is going to be a no-brainer. I think that's that, now the 17th game. There may be a little bit more push and pull on that because you know you're talking about player safety and how are we going to address that, and that's the biggest thing supposedly for CTE concussion protocol, blah blah. So that's going to get a little bit of a pushback, and I do see them going from 17 fairly quickly to 18, and they're asking permission to go to 17 and asking permission to go to 18. So like you say, probably it won't happen in the 2022, maybe not even the 2020 or 2021 season, maybe 2022
for the 17th
game. And real quickly, they may say, okay, we'll do the 17th game in 2022 and the 18th game would be in 2023 if they have all that time maybe to get ready for. I could see them. Odd number is weird to me, that odd number. I think it's a scheduling nightmare.
My guess, though, on that, and I could be wrong, is that, you know, they'll go to 17 for a while.
You think?
I just have a hard time because that's going to be the sticking point because of health concerns. Will you accept another game of punishment to your body? I just think it would maybe even the entire 10-year term before they can then try to sell them on 18.
Really? See, I was thinking the other way. I was thinking that if they get 17 in, because ultimately I think they'd like to go 18-2. I mean, I think that's the
– as in preseason for two.
Right. Yeah. 18-2. And then everybody will have more combined workouts, two organizations getting together at training camp and getting more workload done, you know, heavier workload done that way. I could see that happening. And it would be controlled, obviously. It wouldn't be as tough on bodies as even preseason games, which are very limited in terms of participation by players. But the preseason games – as we know, they become a joke. I mean, there are teams in the NFL that don't play their starters at all in the entire preseason, not just the third preseason game. I mean, it play players just the third preseason game, those starters for over a half. They're not doing it at all. They're not even having guys out there getting any work in the preseason. So it's become kind of a farce. So I could see them trying to go, you know, to 18-2 at some point in time, or at least having a phraseology in the collective bargaining agreement that at any time during that 10-year time frame, we can bring the 18th game, you know, to the table for discussion instead of, you know, having that off the table as such for a decade.
So the new league year begins on March 18th. So it sounds like they're trying to get this thing done by then so that some of this stuff can go into effect right now. And if you're trying to get the players to vote yes, that's a big carrot to dangle. The salary cap will go up, could help current free agents. The minimum salary is going to go up by $100,000. I mean, if you want the rank and file to approve this thing by one vote as a majority, things like that are going to get that lower tier that you were talking about to say yes.
Yeah, I mean, if 66%, two-thirds of the player reps pass it, I think they're going to get 51% of the players very easily. I really do. So I think the player rep, the conference calls that are going to be going on today are going to be very interesting. And they're going to have calls too to all of their teammates. I mean, the telephone company is going to be busy today. There's going to be some lines that are going to be having some issues, but, because I can see, honestly, guys at their homes with their player up speakerphone, and the wife's right there. Are you kidding me? We're taking that. Are you kidding me? My husband, he might not make the team. Oh, honestly, it's like you have to, as a player rep, you have to sell the benefits of everybody's situation is different, and you have to kind of mollify everything for each case, you know? And I'm not going to tell you to play a 17th game. What right do I have to do that? But here's reasons why. Here's reasons not to. You decide. And I'm telling you, pressure. Married players cross the picket line faster than the guys that are single. There's no doubt about that. When you have veteran players crossing the picket line, every one of them has a wife and kids. Every single one of them.
All right, before we get to this week's Ask Lap questions from people on Twitter and Facebook, I want to cover one more topic, and this has to do with a great Q&A that Paul Daner Jr. did on The Athletic with Zach Taylor. And there was one thing in there that made me think that Zach Taylor might be listening to our podcast, because you said quite a while ago that training camp was not physical enough, this year. In an effort to avoid injuries, there just wasn't enough contact. So here's what Zach Taylor said to Paul Daner this week. Quote, "The bottom line is we have to have the mentality that we are going to be more physical. That starts in training camp the first day you put the pads on." It is almost word for word for what you were saying.
Yeah, I think it's a factor. And in this collective bargaining agreement that we're talking about, they specifically address minimizing, diminishing the amount of contact, you know, at training camp. So, but what you can do, I would do, you know, heartily. I would do with full effort. I think that there's no substitute for it. I just... It's hard to ramp it up, and particularly if you're going to start cutting down preseason games, it's hard to ramp it up. And I think maybe doing something with other teams, like I talked about before, you know, where you bring people together and you have one-on-ones. After a while, you at training camp, like I knew Eddie Edwards' every move, you know, and it was like I'm not saying it was easy to pass protect Eddie Edwards, but it was much easier week three than it was week one, when it was like, oh man, what's he going to be doing, you know? And everybody has moves that they do better than others and favorite moves, and just getting an exposure to different stuff, because you can fall into a little bit of a trap. You can lull yourself into, hey, I'm ready to go, and all of a sudden you go against a dude that's got some stuff like, man, I haven't seen that before. How do I adjust? What do I do to combat that? What's my counter to that move, man? That's a pretty good move. So there's no basically replacement for repetition against it. You know, you just can't like, you know, mental telepathy, put it in your head. It just doesn't happen. You have to go out and do it and rep it. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think Jim Turner will have any problem, or Coach Eason on the defensive line. I don't think there'll be any problem with, you know, picking up the tempo, you know, with the upfront guys.
All right. Time to hear from Bengaldom via the hashtag Ask Lap. Got some great questions from the audience a couple of weeks ago, the last time we did that. So here we go. We got a bunch of them today. From Dale, the Bengals don't typically cut players, but after going 2-14, do you think they will change that philosophy and in turn also be more aggressive in free agency?
They very well could. You know, there's some people, you know, that are potentially being considered to be let go. There always are, you know, every year. And I could see that happening this year. You know, Cordy Glenn, in my mind, has to be the number one candidate for that. And it would free up additional dollars. There's other guys, you know, on the roster. We could probably go through a litany of guys. So you have to consider that, opening up more dollars that would allow you to go ahead and attack free agency with more gusto and maybe – In bigger numbers in free agency, not necessarily creating dollars to sign this one free agent for mega dollars. That's a 50-50 proposition. But, you know, in turn, like, for example, if I could move Cordy Glenn's salary and have money where I could go sign two veteran linebackers in free agency, heartbeat, done. Where do I sign to get that thing accomplished? I'd do that yesterday. So I think those kind of things are probably on the table.
Dre Kirkpatrick's name comes up quite a bit as a potential cap casualty. What do you think?
Yeah, that one's interesting. You know, I mean, it's is it to the point where brought up as a cap casualty, the first thing I would do if I really liked the organization and wanted to stay, I'd have my representation. Or I would have, back in the day, I would have gone into the club and said, you know, let's rediscuss what kind of value do you think I have, and if it doesn't fit with what you think you present, go ahead and let them do it. But if you're real with yourself, you know, and they are real with them with what they're thinking, you can redo a deal. You guys have done that, and I think it's intelligent to do that, honestly. So I think camp or cap casualty sounds so severe. There can be a lot of massaging, though. You know, massaging with players and just see where it all shakes out. See what happens.
All right, I'm combining the next two from Chris and Steve O. Chris, if the Rams don't re-sign Andrew Whitworth, what are the chances that the Bengals would offer and that he would be interested. And then from Steve O, what about Whitworth at right tackle and moving Bobby Hart to right guard?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, then it's like, what do you do with a guy like Fred Taylor? You know, who basically has shown. Fred Johnson. Fred Taylor, great running back, Jacksonville Jaguars. Fred Johnson, who made himself some money last year, I thought. You know, I thought he performed pretty well. Very athletic guy, former basketball player. You know, just kind of scratching the surface of what his, you know, abilities are. I'm not sure at this stage of the career. They made a determination that Andrew Whitworth was at the end of his career a few years ago. To bring him back now, if the team that he did sign with no longer has interest, I'm not sure they bring him back, you know, at that point. It's like, you know, when Max Montoya was done, they didn't bring Max Montoya back. They made an error, and you make mistakes. You know, sometimes you don't guess right. You don't project it right. Everybody does. It happens. And Max went on to great years with the Raiders, and you know they didn't bring him back to Cincinnati when he was done with the great years with the Raiders. I can see the same kind of scenario in this one. And I think that they're building their offensive line with people that aren't on putting out on number 18 on their career. You know, they're trying to build their offensive line differently than that.
From Jordan, what compensation would you predict for potential trades for Andy Dalton and or Cordy Glenn?
Boy, Andy Dalton, I mean, when you look at what the Ravens got for Flacco, I think it was a fifth-round pick from the Denver Broncos.
I think that was a four.
Was it a four? Mm-hmm. Okay. So in that case, you know, here's the guy that was Super Bowl MVP, you know, had – got the big contract, but he goes 11 touchdowns, no interceptions in the playoffs, and his team wins the Super Bowl. So, again, people are saying, you know, second-round pick. And to me, with the glut of free agent quarterbacks that you don't have to pay, you don't have to give anything for. I mean, this is not a good year, honestly, to try to trade a quarterback like Andy. Now, is he more valuable to franchises than some of these quarterbacks that are on the very end of their career? I think Andy's got obviously quite a few years left. But still, when you have guys like that in the marketplace, it changes the value. So I'd take a four. I'd take a four for Andy Dalton. I'd take a – I don't know what I'd take for Cordy Glenn.
Lunch?
Yeah. bag of cleats. I don't know. I don't know what, you know, at this point with Cordy, if they can trade Cordy Glenn, God bless him. I don't know what kind of value he has. You know, league-wide, I'm not sure what they can get for Cordy Glenn. But if somebody throws something out there, I would pounce on that, whatever it is.
From a Twitter follower who goes by Overly Optimistic Bengals Fan, do you envision the Bengals using more heavy personnel in dynamic ways?
You know, it's they've got, you know, we just talked about Fred Johnson and the athletic ability that he has. And he kind of advanced from the third tackle in packages to, hey, let's put him at left tackle at the end of the season, see if he can play. I can see it. I can see them, you know, utilizing more of that heavy personnel. You know, they've got some athletic offensive linemen. I mean, Prince is another guy from Ohio State that they're going to try to develop a little bit that they picked up, off of waivers. So during the course of the season. So, I do think that with Isaiah Prince and with Fred Johnson, you've got two guys that. It's almost like you had your draft early, you know, and you picked up guys that have shown they can play in the National Football League. So it's not like, man, you know, can they or can't they? Now, I think Fred has shown more than Isaiah has, obviously, at this point. But Isaiah is, I think, somebody that you can work with. It's going to be interesting. I could see him doing that. I could see them going heavy personnel creatively, seeing Fred – maybe even being a threat catching the football.
Went out for one pass.
Yeah, and they jumped him. I mean, they covered the big boy. They blanketed him. So, you know, obviously, he's not a secret. He's not a surprise that he played basketball and he's athletic and all that. So, yeah, it'll be interesting that what kind of packages they can do there. And I, you know, Joe Mixon, Giovanni Bernard, all the running backs, I'm sure they'd love it, you know, to run behind extra big body mass type guys like that.
From Mark, will the next generation of the Brown family run the franchise differently? And do you have any feel for what they'll do as the stadium lease expires in 2026?
I think the next generation has been largely running the Bengals organization for a while. You know, Mike Brown is 84 years old. I think the day-to-day operation and decision-making is already in the lap of Katie and Troy Blackburn. Now, Mike is heavily involved in terms of they don't do anything without informing him. I'm not saying that. He's involved in the process, but he's not spearheading the process like he once did. He has handed off a lot of those duties and responsibilities already to Katie and Troy. So, you know, they've been doing it for a while, you know, as well. It's not like it just happened, you know, last week. It's been a good number of years now. And I think it's probably increasing, you know, on a year-by-year basis, which is more than understandable. As far as the lease, the stadium lease, man, that one kind of scares me a little bit, because as the league continues to be extremely popular, some city is going to throw some crazy deal out there that you wonder, how can you turn it down? So that's my big concern is, as this juggernaut continues to grow, $14 billion, $15 billion annual revenue industry of the National Football League, by 2026, it may be closer to $20 billion or more. Some city's going to say, I want a piece of that. I want to get on in that action. And, you know, how will Cincinnati battle that or counter that, or what kind of offers will be made? That is a little bit of concern of mine for sure.
All right, another combined question from Paul and Christian. Paul asked, what would the Bengals accept to trade out of the number one overall pick? And then Christian asked, did the Akili Smith offer back in the 99 draft have any effect on accepting or rejecting offers in relation to dealing the number one overall? And I guess we should go back and discuss the 99 offer from the Saints. They wanted Ricky Williams. The right. Bengals had the number three overall pick. The Saints offered all of their 99 picks, rounds 1 through 7. They had the 12th overall pick that year, plus their number one in 2000, plus their number one in 2001, plus their number two in 2002. So that was 3 number ones, 2 number twos, and a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all in exchange for the number three pick in the draft, which the Bengals turned down and took Akili Smith. The Redskins took a slightly watered-down version of the Saints' offer at number 5 overall. But in any case, getting back to the question, what would the Bengals accept in order to trade the number 1 overall pick this year? And did what ultimately turned out to be a bad decision affect them going forward?
You would think so. I couldn't believe they didn't pull the trigger on that trade. And, you know, I think a lot of people in the organization couldn't believe that they didn't pull the trigger on the trade. And obviously, hindsight is it should have pulled the trigger on the trade. And if the Miami Dolphins are willing to give up their whole draft, which includes 3 number ones and every other pick, I mean, how do you not take that? That's remarkable to me. But I guess part of the feeling that you have to deal with at that point is, if they're willing to give up all that, why am I trading that pick? Now, the Bengals didn't have interest in Ricky Williams. Mike Ditka was like, this is what I want. This is what I need. This is the final component I'm missing. This is the piece. I don't care about all the other stuff. I'm good. With him, it elevates us to whatever level. If the Dolphins do offer the mother load of 3 first-round picks, part of you has to say, you know, what do they see in Joe Burrow that we don't necessarily? And if they were to do that, now I don't see them doing it, because I think they're going to draft Tua, and I think they're going to have they feel like they're going to have a guy who may be the best quarterback in this draft if he heals. How did the Bengals draft Tua, thinking that he may have to miss his rookie year? How many number one picks have they had that have missed their whole rookie year?
The last four.
No, oh. But you look at Tua being so beaten up and having so many injuries. The greatest player in Bengals history, who's in the Hall of Fame, didn't play much at USC. It was like he's not available. He's a great player, but hell, so many teams took him off the board. You know, I told the story about Parcells with the Giants. They would not put him on the board, and he was infuriated. And they just, Anthony was off of more boards than he was on. And the Bengals make the pick, turns into, Mr. Durable. totally available. So his run of bad luck happened in college. Billy Price. You know, all these guys that we're talking about that the Bengals have had first round. One starts 48 straight games. One starts 50 straight games in college and can't get to training camp in their rookie year. So it's weird. You know, maybe you don't draft the healthy ones through college because they're going to get hurt in the NFL. Maybe the ones that have gone through the injury deal, maybe the football gods say, yeah, you paid your price. You're going to have a great NFL career.
That didn't work out so well with John Ross, though.
No, John Ross, Kejana Carter. Very first preseason, his first preseason up there in Detroit. You look at the first pick of the draft, Kejana Carter with an injury like that, a devastating injury. And that's the thing that muddies this whole deal is the injury. Nobody's an injury soothsayer. And it's like you can't put your hat on and prognosticate injuries when they're going to occur. As we said, many times, you're 100% at injury risk, 100% of every play, 100% of all players on the field. That's just the nature of the beast.
From JT, who will the Bengals select at number 33? That's the first pick in the second round, or will they trade up or down?
Well, I think that they will take the best defensive player that's on the board. I really believe that. After taking Joe Burrow, I think they feel like, that's obviously going to upgrade them offensively in their minds at that point in time. And then they'd probably at the next pick go for the best defensive player, and they do have, it could be at any of the three levels. Their defense could take an infusion. So I think whoever that is, whoever slides to that 33rd pick. Now the question is about the trade, and we've talked about this. The 33rd pick, the 65th pick, that every round when they have the first pick of that round, they're going to get phone calls. Because people are going to redo their boards quickly. And some, after day one, first round, everybody does their boards. First pick of the second round, that's the Bengals. Second and third round, even the third round, shuffle your board quickly, and you're going to have to do it in a hurry. You're going to have to, have it almost done, the last two or three picks, does it affect it or not? And, okay, boy, that guy slid out of the second. He's there at the very top of the third, first pick. Bengals get calls. Then after the third round, another whole night. And next morning to reshuffle your board before the draft hits again. And boy, there you are at the first pick of the fourth round. So they're going to have a lot of phone calls, a lot of draft conversation activity with every pick. So I could see them. I could see them really almost maybe with the 33rd pick, I could see them probably trading down more so than giving up a high pick every round to move up into the bottom end of the first round. I could see them getting capital with that 33rd pick and then, moving around up or down later. But I'm not sure that 33rd pick with the, the 54th or whatever it is, the 65th, the next pick in the third round, taking those two to move up or mortgaging next year's, we'll do this 33rd pick and the fourth round pick of, 2021. I don't see them doing that as much as maybe trading back.
I'll make the call right now. They are trading down in the second round.
I think it could.
See, the first round comes to an end. There's a lot of great talent left, and the Bengals think, we want more picks. We've only got one in every round right now. This is our chance. Who knows? Maybe add another second rounder. Certainly, you could probably get an extra third rounder if you trade down a little bit in the second round. I think that's going to happen. I really do.
And if we're saying, okay, take the best defensive player available with the 33rd pick, if you're looking at your board and there was a run on the offensive side of the football, and there's a bunch of defensive players left that you'd be happy with at 33, trade back and get multiples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hit every position, hit two of the three position levels, you know, with picks. And or if a wide receiver's like, I can't believe that dude's still there, you know, maybe you can pick him up, you know, if you don't trade back too far. So it, who knows? But I agree. I think in the early stages of the draft, they'll be trading back first and second round. If there's any trades, well, obviously you can't trade up any higher than number one, but you'll be trading back in the first, trading back in the second, and then after that, potentially moving up. But I could even see trading back in the third round. Trading back in the second, getting additional picks, trading back with your first pick of the third round, if you've got an additional third, moving back and getting another third and a fourth. I could see them playing that game pretty much, you know, the domino effect all the way down every round of the draft.
Next question from John. Will the Bengals pick up John Ross's fifth-year option? If not, will they select a wide receiver in the first three rounds?
I don't see them picking up, you know, John Ross's option unless he has a Pro Bowl year.
Wait, they have to make the decision by March or by May 5th.
No. Let's say I don't see how they can project to pay him $15 million on this year's salary cap. There's no way. I just don't see it. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if there were a receiver, this is such a receiver plentiful draft. They're going to take a receiver. It's just a question of how high. And you know, I don't see them picking up John Ross's his option. Now if he has an unbelievable season, you know, maybe at that point, good for John. He's got leverage. But how much more? How much more would they pay him than $15 million for the first year of the following contract anyway?
They'd pay him less.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you'd have a bonus, you know, if you get a second bite of the apple, there's a bonus and all that, and it's all prorated. But the actual contract, maybe he might get, depending on the bonus, he might get close, but you're not going to be paying him the average of the top five salaries of his position the first year of a contract extension if he does have a great year. So I just, there's no way they're going to pick up that 15 mil. There's no way.
Here's a quick reminder that he was taking one pick before Patrick Mahomes. But we move on. To Tyler, what are your thoughts on linebacker Akeem Davis Gaither, a player that you saw in person at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, I was very impressed with him. He can flat out pick him up and put him down. The dude can run. You know, not a big linebacker, 6'2", 215. You know, you think, okay, you know, could he even play? Does he have the coverage abilities of like a big safety? Yeah, he does. He can run. And everything that I gathered watching him on the field, he has a good rapport with his teammates. Seemed like he was not one of these, you know, guys that was difficult to deal with in terms of other players. Him thinking he was too cool for school, none of that. My understanding is that he was very good in the classroom. So I, on a lot of levels, I like him. And I would think Darren Simmons would like him as well. A guy like that would upgrade, you know, his special teams obviously as well. So I think he's got value. I think he's got significant value. He was one of the guys that, you know, I thought of the handful of linebackers for North and South in the Senior Bowl. He was somebody that jumped out at me a little bit for sure.
All right, we'll do a couple more hashtag ask lap questions from Steven. The Bengals switched blocking schemes about midway through the season, which helped the running game. Should they stick with those changes, or should they go back to the initial scheme and find players that fit?
I think that if the guys that finish the season are pretty much the guys that are starting this one, I think you stay with the continuity of that. What that worked, you know, to me, it's the last thing you want to do is it definitely fits. You're not going to have a guy that you're going to throw in there that is going to be a big athletic stiff. You know, I mean, everybody that they've got in camp right now has the athleticism to do the things that we're talking about, the gap scheme where, you know, you block down, you pull, linemen are in space instead of just, inside zone and outside zone where you're just trying to maul and mash people. So I think with the personnel, that the reason they made the change was adapting their scheme to fit their personnel. So if their personnel doesn't change drastically, why would you change away from anything that had worked so well? The last five games of the year, second half of the season, they were sixth in the NFL in rushing the last eight games of the year. The last five, I think it was even better than that. So I'd stay with what was working, that's for sure, and then just keep building on it, you know, and go from there.
All right, final Ask Lap question. This is from Jared. Will the Bengals have new uniforms this year? And I will twist that slightly and say and ask, should they have new uniforms? Because Chris Sims keeps making this thing that just to change the mojo, got to change the helmet. It's time to try something different to change the mojo.
Well, I know the last time the change was made, we went to the Super Bowl. That was the 81 season. They made the big change and put stripes on the helmet. And, you know, I remember the initial reaction by everybody, including players on the team. Oh, my gosh, man, we look like we're literally at the zoo. I mean, this is like, we better play well. These are a little bit dicey. I mean, it was a big, big, bold move that Paul Brown made. But he always liked the Rams, you know, helmet with that logo. So he wanted to go more in that direction and have something like there is no doubting who that football team is. When you see that, you know exactly who it is. And it panned out, definitely panned out. I don't know. I don't know how drastic a change that would be talked about. But maybe something to just I think – I think any edge that you can try to find, whether it be psychological, physical, whatever it is, as long as the players believe it, the players are buying it, I'm good with it. You know, it doesn't matter, I guess, whatever. The only people that it matters, when you melt it all down, boil it all down, are the guys wearing the uniforms and going out there and playing for the city of Cincinnati and for their franchise.
Here's the uniform change I want to see. I want there to be a number 9 with a burrow on the back of it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that call. I do. I think, you know, the more I see him and the more varied environments I see him in, I like him more and more. You know, I think the one thing that he seems to be, everybody has different personalities. Even these people that are interviewing him, some of them are just looking for as much dirt and as much. And he handles it all very well. You know, he might give him just a little, but he doesn't go overboard. You know, I think he's extremely intelligent, and I think he's a natural-born leader of men. I think guys gravitate toward him. I have not heard one person after their first encounter with Joe Burrow say, I don't know about that guy. I mean, he sells you. He sells you fast.
Appreciate the time. Thanks, buddy.
My pleasure, sir. Anytime.
That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Next week, Lap and I will head to Indianapolis for the scouting combine, where Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor, and Duke Tobin are all scheduled to speak on Tuesday. We'll have some good material in next week's show. And if you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. Those 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find our podcast. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.